Blog Talk Radio.
I'm going to give the people what they want. Sensation, horror, shock. Send them out in the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death.
It is, Vince. Thank you. Good evening. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Bigley from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One. And we're along here with the lovely...
Thank you very much. CW here, traveling the highways and byways, waiting for the big day of Halloween.
And just in case there was any doubt in your mind, 4 days in a row of Halloween, we're going to start off with music on Friday night, Halloween music all night Friday night, a double feature drive-in on Saturday night, Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff all night long on Sunday. That's going to be a night special two-hour show. And then our annual new look at War of the Worlds. That'll be Monday, the 30th.
85th anniversary?
Wow.
Wow.
Since the original broadcast, our first one was on the 80th anniversary, I believe.
It's how long we've been.
Maybe that was the second one. Maybe that was the second one. Because we aired it the way that everybody heard it that year, I think.
Yeah.
Wow. It'll be interesting if both Orson Welles and H.G. Wells, no relation, are listening from the break beyond for the show and the story that helped build their fame.
Fogg's Bane wrote, give the people what they want. You got to give the people what they want. The more they get, the more they need, and every time they get harder and harder to please. Make sure it's prime time and on a Saturday night, you got to give the people what they want. That must be from a song. He has good references. That Bill Ward bomb he dropped yesterday went right by me at first.
Yeah, well, at least you caught up to it. I didn't.
Well, as soon as he referenced Black Sabbath, I'm like, oh, he knows exactly what that intro was all about. All right. All right, so we welcome Fogg's Bane in the chat. We had a handful of folk yesterday.
We did. We have a newbie in there, too.
Yeah.
It stayed with us, I think, pretty much the whole show.
Yep, which is cool. And we didn't scare them too badly. As we did three shows on coffins, we got a couple of them for you tonight. If I didn't erase too much of it.
There's your answer, Dale. Fogg's put it down there. The Kinks. Give the people what they want.
Hey, Dave, maybe you ought to take a look at the message I sent you on Messenger. So we think we have two full shows for you tonight on coffins.
We do.
Maybe.
We do.
If some ignoramus hadn't erased half of one of them.
Yeah. Not a big deal. They don't disappear until after they are. So
to be that ignoramus. That's okay. Dave to the rescue as always. Bring you these fine radio programs. And tonight we'll have Inner Sanctum and Blackstone, the magic detective.
Yes. And magic is always easier on the radio than it is on the television because you get to actually see it on television.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Hard to see magic tricks on radio. They're easy to do.
we should pull out the thing. We did this thing that's about the same. Remember they had the TV magic cards? Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Dale? I bought a set of those from Marshall Brody.
Yeah, well, we did the radio magic cards with Harry Blackball Jr. instead of Harry Blackstone Jr. And A fun little piece we did on Weirdness Radio way back when with radio magic cards.
Show everybody in radio and your card.
I flipped through the deck three times, and I had an audience clap their hands. Ooh. And
ooh.
Wow.
Have to go back to the archives and try and find it. Yeah.
Magic tricks on radio. Who knew? Who knew? The things we could do.
Definitely.
Since it's not...
The theme is push an update. The pine box.
So of course the theme is coffin because we're doing magic and so it must be coffins, yes.
I prefer to think of them as corpse crates.
Corpse crates.
Corpse crates, yes.
Yeah.
Body boxes.
Come on,
the body
down
bags
to...
are a little better than the boxes do, you know. Nice tight.
Come on down
there.
To Erie House Lumber and order your corpse crates now. We have a seasonal fall special.
Mm-hmm.
If nobody croaks, you can keep one for Halloween. There you go.
Buy one, get one.
How appropriate.
Or even if they do. Or even if they do.
How appropriate to open up the end of the Halloween weekend with caskets this weekend yet, you know?
Yeah, good lead-in, Dave. Good lead-in. I'll have to do a refresh here.
Yeah, usually if it bleeds, it leads, but there's not a lot of blood in this one, you know, but there are a lot of caskets.
Well, caskets can be fun. There's part
caskets
two.
Caskets can be fun.
I feel much better knowing
wasn't
part two is now
that was
there.
In the mall, caskets are us or something to that effect?
I had a...
Well, go ahead.
My first Halloween as a DJ, I had a friend who built me this casket. They put a K on the lid, you know, and everything. I had this cool Dracula outfit, medallion and everything. It looked really cool. And I had a friend of mine go up to the booth, and there was this horrible accident. Dale's not going to make it today. And then the pallbearers bring in my casket with me in it. And I had a smoke bomb, and I had it in this metal box because I didn't want to catch on fire, right? Well, the metal box got superheated from the smoke bomb, and I came flying out of the box. Wow! It was funny. It was worth second-degree burns, though. I got a lot of laughs. And then the bar owner got mad at me because I filled the bar with smoke. Now people have to go outside to have a cigarette. Whatever. That was back in the good old days when you could smoke in the bar and at the DJ booth, I might
I was thinking you filled the bar with more smoke versus some smoke?
Yes. You thought everybody was going to leave the bar, and I'm like, no. They're all laughing, having a good time. Just chill. They'll be right back in. And make sure that's tobacco they're having out there. Two great shows tonight. I'd like to begin with Blackstone.
Yeah, why not?
And wrap it up with something a little creepier. Right?
Yeah, good old Blackstone, kind of interesting. It was based on a 15-minute radio series based on Cecil Stoner's comic book series, Blackstone, Master Magician, and was on Mutual on Sunday afternoons at 2:45 from October 3rd, 1948 until March 26th, 1950. And
good run.
Edwin Jerome is the world's greatest living magician. It was based on the real-life magician Harry Blackstone Sr. Dale and I are more familiar with the Harry Blackstone Jr., although he never did a lot of television. I think he just mostly did appearances in Vegas and things like that.
Yep. Well, let's give Harry a run here then with the Accusing Corpse. Originally broadcast.
Episode number 46 from, it'd be August 14th of 1949.
wonderful.
The Magic Detective, starring the world's greatest living magician, Blackstone. He tells you the inside story of the accusing corpse. And right after the story, Blackstone will explain tricks that you yourself can perform. Reveal the guarded secrets of the world's greatest living magician. And now, stand by for Blackstone, the Magic Detective. Blackstone. Rhoda. That's funny. No one seems to be here. Blackstone.
Mr. Blackstone, please help me. Please.
Look, I
know you're not a regular detective, but no one else will listen to me. No one will believe me. Oh, Mr. Blackstone.
Look, I'm Alan Kent. I'm not...
Well, where is he? Where is Mr. Blackstone?
Well, I was just looking for him myself. He doesn't seem to be around right now. No, come on, stop. I mean, gosh, don't cry like that. Look, there. Stop it. Oh, Blackstone, thank heaven you're here.
What's the matter?
What on earth have you been doing to make this poor girl cry like this? You ought to be ashamed of yourself, Alan.
Mr. Blackstone, you've got to help me. I know it was murder, I know it. But the doctor says it was heart failure, and there was no motive, and even the autopsy didn't prove anything. I'm so afraid.
Rhoda, get Miss...
Grant. Janet Grant.
Get Miss Grant a glass of water, and then we'll see what we can do to help.
Here you are. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm all right now. I'm sorry to have broken down like this, but you were my last hope, and when you weren't here,
well,
I just...
Well, he's here now.
Now, suppose you tell me what this is all about.
Have you ever been frightened? Really frightened, I mean.
I certainly have.
I think everyone has, sometimes in their lives.
I'm frightened now.
What's the matter? You said something about murder and an autopsy.
It is murder.
Who was murdered?
My Aunt Maisie. She died at midnight the day before yesterday. She went to bed and never woke up.
Was she an old woman?
Yes, very.
Well, isn't that a perfect way to die, just to go to sleep?
She was murdered, I tell you. Murdered in cold blood. I don't know how I know it, but I do. When I go into her house, there's something evil there. Something wicked and... unknown and evil.
You say there was an autopsy.
Yes. I had this feeling of evil so strongly that I had an autopsy performed.
But the doctors found nothing?
Nothing.
Well, who would want to kill your aunt? Who would benefit by her dying?
I'm the only person who inherited.
But did she leave very much?
Very little. She'd had a great many old family jewels, but they're all gone now.
Gone? What do you mean by that?
During the last years of her life, Auntie was, well, eccentric. She gave away most of the jewelry. She gave it to strangers, to people who did her small favors, just anybody. There's nothing left.
Did you ever know any of the people she gave the jewelry to?
No. The only way I found out about it was when Miss Ella asked me to try to stop her.
Miss Ella?
Addie's housekeeper.
Oh.
Only she was more than that. She was a companion, a nurse, a friend, everything.
She came and told you about the gifts of jewelry. Well, what did you do?
I went and talked to Addie about it. She denied it. She didn't like to have the jewelry discussed.
She thought you were trying to get it away from her?
I wasn't, though.
When was your aunt's funeral?
It's tomorrow. That's why I had to come and see you today. It's the last chance.
Well, could we see your aunt?
Why, yes, I guess so. She's lying out at the old house now. Miss Ella is keeping watch.
Get your hat, Rhoda.
Auntie's in there. I'll go in and tell Miss Ella that you've come.
Good.
I don't like this. That girl's right. There is a feeling of evil around here.
You feel it too, Alan?
Oh, quiet, you two.
You've come to see my mistress?
Yes, if we may.
You must leave her in peace. There's been too much excitement around here. The dead cannot rest when there's excitement.
Well, we've come to help if we can.
Oh, she's past help now. Leave her in peace.
Won't you come in, Mr. Blackstone?
Very well. Rhoda, you and Alan wait here with Miss Ella.
All right. Why don't you try to rest, Miss Ella? Janet and Mr. Blackstone are with her now.
I cannot rest until my mistress rests, too.
She is resting.
No, people won't leave her alone. There's doctors and strangers around her. She hated strangers. She wouldn't allow them near her.
But Janet said she gave jewelry to strangers.
She wouldn't have done that if she hated them, would she, Miss Ellen?
I don't know. She was a good woman. And now she's gone. Gone. And I won't let her rest. I'm going back to her now.
Whew. She seems sort of violent.
Yeah, she does. Well, what do you think we ought to do now?
I'd say if I had my druther, go home and go to a nice, quiet horror movie to calm our nerves. Something peaceful like Dracula or Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
I think we'd better go in there.
Us? In there?
Yes.
Maybe I'd better wait for you here. Phone might ring or something.
No, sir, you're coming with me.
Oh, all right. But if my hair turns white, I'm going to hold you personally responsible.
Look over there.
Yeah. They're all kneeling around the coffin.
Oh, there are candles flickering. It's terrifying. I don't like it.
Will you want to go to that movie now? The corpse is moving.
He's pointing. Oh, no.
The body's sitting up.
Stop it, I tell you. You're dead. Oh, you can't rise from the dead to accuse me. The dead cannot talk.
She's accusing you, Miss Ella.
No.
She says you killed her.
No.
Look at her finger. It's pointing at you.
Yes, I killed her. I killed her, and I'm glad. Oh, I'm glad. She deserved to die. She was cruel. Cruel. I killed her. I killed her.
Why did you kill her, Miss Ella?
She didn't need the jewels. She didn't want them. She never wore them. But they meant everything to me. And then she found out that I'd stolen them. I had to kill her. And so I did. No one knew. Even the doctors didn't know. And now she's dead. And I'm glad. Glad.
I'm darn happy to be back here in your studio, Blackstone. I wish you two would stop taking me on cases.
That's what you always say, afterwards.
Look, I don't even like to discuss the subject, but there is one thing I'd like to know.
How I made Auntie sit up in her coffin and point that finger at Miss Ella.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, when you were a little boy, Alan, didn't you ever attach black thread to an object and then jerk it away just as someone started to pick it up?
Yes, but what's that got to do
with... Some magician's tricks are based on that same principle. Only magicians use black piano wire. I tied a piece of it to the wrist of the corpse, and when I pulled, it raised its arm and then started to sit up.
But how did she kill her?
She gave her a hypo almost every night to make her sleep.
Oh.
It was easy enough to see that an air bubble got into her vein.
So that was it.
And so another mystery was solved by magic.
Boy, I'm glad there was a nice logical solution to that. Maybe I won't have quite so many nightmares now that I know how it was done.
Well, now we have solved one mystery. Let me show you another. The riddle of the three jacks.
Oh, I see a card trick coming up.
That's right, Rhoda. Well, here's the pack. Now, watch me closely while I deal some cards. There's one for you.
And one for me.
And another here for me.
And another here for me.
And there's a third card for you, Rhoda. But I'm going to use your third card, Alan, to scoop up the other two like this.
I see. Now you're putting my cards on the top of the pack. Why is that?
Because Rhoda has three jacks. Turn them up, Rhoda, and see for yourself.
Yes. Well, these are the three jacks, but...
But what, Rhoda?
Well, could you deal them like that again?
Of course. Lay them face down on the pack.
There they are.
And here they go. One to the left,
mm-hmm.
One to the right, one to the left, one to the right, one to the left. And with the next card, I scoop up the two on the right and put them back on the pack.
And these cards on the left are mine. Do you mean there'll be three jacks again?
They are the three jacks, Rhoda. Look at them.
Yes, the jacks.
I'll lay them face down on the pack again and watch me deal. Slowly this time so there can be no trickery.
One to me, one to Alan, one to me.
And now I use the sixth card to scoop up Alan's other two.
And are my three cards the jacks?
They are, Rhoda.
But it can't be possible. But they are the jacks.
Say, Blackstone, can anybody do that trick?
Oh, why, of course, Alan. And if Rhoda can't think it out in the next few minutes, I'll be back to explain how it's done.
Blackstone, for goodness sake, tell me how to work this impossible trick.
And how you can work it over and over again.
Well, it's very simple. You see, you use four jacks.
Four jacks?
That's right. Three on the top, then any odd card, and under that, the fourth jack.
What happens then, Blackstone?
I deal one to the left, one to the right, and so on, until I come to the last card on the right.
Yes, that's the one you slide underneath.
So I can pick up the other two with it and put them back on the pack.
But my cards are here on the table, and I have the three jacks.
Three jacks, Rhoda. Only one of them was that fourth jack you didn't know about.
Oh, say, that's wonderful. But how can you repeat it over and over again?
Well, do you remember the way I picked up the two cards on the right by scooping them with a third card?
Yes, you did it that way every time.
Well, when you put your three jacks on top of the pack, we're right back where we started.
Three jacks on the top.
Then an odd card.
And under that, the fourth jack. So when we deal two heaps of three, there will again be three jacks in the hand on the left.
Only never the same three jacks.
Never the same three jacks. Only no one ever knows the difference. I hope you like that trick, ladies and gentlemen. And until next time, this is Blackstone saying good magic and goodbye.
With us next time when the world's greatest living magician, Blackstone, tells us the story of death-defying death and explains more tricks that you yourself can perform. Listen in again to Blackstone, the world's greatest living magician.
He's magical. Didn't he hawk Jiffy Pop? No.
Wow.
This show, interesting enough, was penned mostly by Walter Gibson, who was wrote those Shadow novels, most of the Shadow novels. A few episodes of The Shadow, but not really a whole lot. And he wrote all of these except for the ones that were done by, hang on, the person he worked with on another show. It would have been Nancy Webb, who worked with Gibb on Chick Carter, Boy Detective. But, not only was he into the supernatural, and he was one of the original founding members of the seances at the Magic House for Harry Houdini. So he was a practicing magician as well as this writer. But he was just so daggone prolific. It's unbelievable. At one point, I was in a used bookstore. I saw like a 3 or 4 volume of Twilight Zone episodes that he had turned into story form.
Ooh.
The guy never gave up until he couldn't type anymore. The guy kept typing. He might still be typing today for all I know.
Beyond the grave.
So very cool show. And then they always give away some chintzy little magic trick at the end too. So.
Yeah, you got to have that.
Got to have a chintzy little magic trick, yes.
Me too, kid. should have a moral, too, but we probably don't.
Not really. Okay, go ahead. We'll see what we got here.
All right, here we go. Let's try it. With crossed fingers, Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Hey, yes, apologies to Gar. If you need a dead body to rise up and point to your killer, you're probably not going to solve the murder. That's
now that
all
wasn't
I got.
So bad, was it?
No,
it
wasn't.
Disgusting.
Oh, yeah, maybe it was. Yeah.
Okay, a little bit. Just a little bit.
Just a wee bit.
Yeah, so that was Blackstone in radio form. He was in magazines and comic books and doing live shows. Blackstone was everywhere, man.
He was. Wasn't in the movies, as far as I know. Wasn't in the movies.
Now, that's surprising. He seemed like a very entrepreneurial sort of character.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd take anybody's money. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
And as we know, the father of special effects, Mr. Georges Méliès. That's how I'm pronouncing it. or Méliès, if you will. Also a magician. An accomplished magician. Who?
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, when I start showing silent films, I want to showcase a lot of his stuff. Some of it looks a little corny by today's standards, but when you look, you see where he was using mirrors. He was using spliced film. He was using animation. Pretty cool.
That was a time when there wasn't special effects. You made him up on the fly.
Yeah, he was considered the grandfather of it. And mix. He was one of the first people to storyboard. I guess the most iconic thing that maybe most people would recognize is that great picture of the moon with the bullet in his eye.
Oh yeah,
and that's from his A Trip to the Moon. A Trip to the Moon. Yep, that was his telling of the Jules Verne story. So, or. Or is that a
very loose interpretation of it? Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if Jules Verne was still alive when he did that movie.
I'm sure he was. What was that? 19 what? 18?
Started in the late 1800s was more prolific in the early 1900s.
Okay.
Like the aughts, as some wants to say. The aughts.
Now, would he have had to get rights to that, or since this was such a new medium, nuts to rights, I'll just do it because I feel like it?
Yeah, I do it because I can.
The media itself was so new, but on the other hand, probably Jules Verne himself didn't have to necessarily approve of it. Probably his works belonged to the publishers, his publishers. So, Jules Verne, actually, he passed away March 24th of 1905.
Yeah, I don't know. And being a new medium, it might have been very easy to get permission back then, too. Yeah, whatever.
Been, yeah.
This new thing ain't going to work out anyway. Go ahead.
Yeah, or because it was so new. There were no rights written or no parameters given. I mean, the first time a movie started streaming over the internet was probably some fan who had the wherewithal to stream it before Hollywood could say, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah, we're not getting paid. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a second.
Could very well be. It's so hard to tell because it was so long ago that it'd be interesting to see some research in that department.
Yeah, you can bet there's somebody who knows because there's so many of these
there's somebody
film buffs
would know
that are
that.
Just
yeah.
Amazing. It's amazing, and these different restoration societies. As I've been researching for wanting to do these silent films, I'm finding that, for example, Metropolis. There was not a 2.5-hour version until like the 1990s. It was a longer, cleaner version was found. And it's like, what? Wow.
Yes. And that version is copyrighted because they took the public domain version, found bits and pieces, and conglomerated them all together. So you can still see a version of it for free. But the one that was put together and cleaned up, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that one somehow is under a copyright.
I believe it is possible to copyright copies of someone of public domain material, if I'm not mistaken.
When you make changes to that, as they did.
Boy, Mickey Mouse is going to take a beating.
it's hard to tell because technically, Steamboat Willie is in public domain, but it isn't because Mickey Mouse is trademarked. And trademarks don't really expire.
I keep hearing that the mouse is going to go out into public domain. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah. It has to. I mean, even a powerhouse such as Disney is going to have to kowtow to the public domain laws eventually. They're really not going to have any choice. I know they'll fight it tooth and nail, the same way they fought to keep Happy Birthday playing for that exhausted, non-original tune. But you do know, of course, when Winnie the Pooh went into public domain, they made a slasher film out of it.
Well, and that's part of the reason to keep it in control. Like, even long after Conan Doyle died, his family, then his granddaughter, had control of the character because they were afraid of what people would do. You basically had to get her permission to do anything really public like that, you know?
Sorry.
But even that will go into public domain as well someday, where the family will have no say in the matter.
Yeah, the granddaughter died, so I don't know how they can keep it out now. And it was so weird in UK, the copyright laws are different. There's something like, according to the Spud, the guy that was for a while was running our Roku channel, said there's nothing in public domain over there because everything they did is like the 50 years after the last person that worked on that project died. Then it becomes public domain.
Oh, God.
And
then you have to document.
Then you
probably have to document everybody that was on it that died, you know? I don't know. But that's wow.
You mean the person that came in to sweep up the floors?
If he was in the credits.
Yes.
If he was in the credits, then,
the
you know.
The janitor's still alive. You lose, pal.
And janitors live forever.
That's right. Well, you'll have to wait until he's put into his coffin, which we are doing radio programs about, including this next little ditty from Inner Sanctum, as he segues on over. Yep. Ready to make ready my grave is the title.
Yeah, this is an Armed Forces rebroadcast. And it comes to us from March 23rd. Yeah, March 23rd of 1946.
Ooh.
Good evening, Pete. First, the Cutter Gallery opening the door to the mystery place. And speaking of doors, tonight we're visiting the Inner Sanctum, so open that door, Mr. Host.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host opening the squeaking door for another session of the AGGMS, the Association of Ghouls, Ghosts, and Midnight Spirit. May I see your membership card as you enter, please? No, it's not a printed card. All you have to do is show me your wrist. If there's any blood pulsing in your arteries, then you don't belong here tonight. Better come back and try some other time. After you've passed your mortuary test. Now for tonight's Inner Sanctum Mystery. It's an original radio play by Emil Peppermann called Make Ready My Grave. And stars two radio favorites, John Banks and Richard Widmark. It's about a boy and a girl who've just been married. A piece of colored string, an open grave, and a hangman's noose. That train is the Southeast Limited. See it? Long, sleek, and powerful. Taking off the miles on the humming rails. A masterpiece of 20th century mechanical perfection. Nothing about it to suggest lurking hate, or fear, or superstition, or death. But let's take a look into compartment A, car 17. John and Betty Loomis, just married, are going for their honeymoon to John's ancestral estate.
Yeah, I'm so happy. How soon do we get to
Loomisville? In about an hour, Betty.
Just think, I married into one of the oldest families in the state.
I hope you'll be very happy, darling.
Oh, I will. You do love me, don't you, John?
Of course I do, Dave. I'll always love you. Always. No matter what happens.
What do you mean, no matter what happens? What could happen? Sam, something's bothering you.
No, it's nothing at all.
You're hiding something. It's something you haven't told me.
It's nothing, Betty. It's nothing to worry about.
You don't want to tell me?
No, not now. Maybe later.
Why are you playing with that piece of wood on the string?
What?
You've been playing with it ever since we came onto the train.
Yes, I never noticed.
I watched you. You've been tying a knot in it.
A knot? Good Lord. I must have tied it without knowing what I was doing.
You've tied it into a noose. A hanger's noose.
I don't know how it came to make it, or how I picked it
up. Well, it's only a piece of string.
Yes, it's only a piece of string. Betty.
What is it, John?
Yeah, take this.
A gun?
Take it.
But why?
If I should ever try to strangle you, please listen to me. If I should ever try to strangle you, promise me to use that gun on me.
What are you talking about?
Loomisville, next stop.
This is where we get it.
John, what's this all about? That piece of yellow string and now this gun.
Put it away, Betty, and remember what I said. Don't ever forget.
Here.
This is just a way station. The train only stops here to let us off. Otherwise, it goes right through.
Mm-hmm. I thought Loomisville was a big town.
Well, it used to be 100 years ago, but now there's only the Loomis estate.
Are we far from the estate?
About 2 miles. Old Herman Galt should be here to pick us up in the station wagon.
Herman Galt?
Mm-hmm. He's a handyman. There's been a Galt working for the Loomis family for the last 150 years.
John, I don't like it here. Dark. That wind.
What the devil can Galt be? I wrote them what train we were taking.
I'm right here, Mr. John.
Oh, Galt, you frightened my wife.
I'm sorry, ma'am, if I scared you.
That's all right. It was just the way you spoke so suddenly out of the darkness.
If you'll follow me, I've got the station wagon back here.
John, he doesn't like me.
Galt? No, that's just his way. He's very devoted to the family. Where do you get to know him?
I don't think I care to. John, he's driving too fast. It's so dark.
Don't worry, Daddy. Galt knows this road like the back of his hand. He'll be there in a few minutes.
I'm frightened. Donald, please, tell me why you gave me the gun.
No, I can't tell you now, Betty. Maybe after you meet Uncle Edna.
John.
What?
What's that in your hand?
What?
Another piece of string. A red one this time.
What? I must have picked it up in here, off the seat.
You've knotted it into another hangman's noose.
Galt?
Yes, Mr. John.
This piece of red string, did you put it here?
No, sir.
Then how did it get here?
You ought to know.
Yes, I ought to know.
Galt, why are you stopping here?
We're home, ma'am. This is the entrance to the Loomis estate. I've got to get out and open the gate. I'll be right back.
Betty, I've got to get out, too. I've got to see for myself.
See what, John?
You stay here, Betty.
But,
stay right where you are.
Wait a minute. I'm coming,
too.
Betty,
get back in the car.
Mr. John is right, ma'am. You shouldn't go with him.
Take care of her, Galt. I won't be late.
Galt, where's he going?
That is the Loomis family cemetery.
See? What does he want to see in there in the middle of the night?
He'll tell you himself, ma'am. in due
time. No, I'm going to find out right now.
Better not, ma'am. Better come.
John! John, wait for me.
Betty, I told you to.
I'm going with you. I want to know what there is in that cemetery.
Back in that car.
Calm your wife now. I have a right to know what this is all about. I'm going with you.
All right, that's the way you feel, fine. But hold on to that gun I gave you. Keep it in your hand all the time.
John, why?
You'll find out soon enough. This is the gate of the family cemetery. All the Loomises and their wives are buried here.
It's so shadowy. That tombstone looks like gold. Oh, my hand, John.
Oh. Just hold on to that gun.
John, whose gold is this with its high tombstone?
My great-grandfather's. Stuart Loomis. He founded the Loomis estate. This is my grandfather's grave. His wife. There's my father. My mother.
That's all.
That should be all.
What do you mean?
Come over here. This is what I came to see. This is what I've been afraid of.
John. John, it's an open grave. Freshly dug.
Yes, Betty. It was just dug tonight.
Who was it for?
Betty, darling. I'm afraid it's the...
What do you mean? Who dug this grave for me? Who?
If I told you, you'd think I was crazy.
No, you've got to tell me. If I'm in danger, I have a right to know. Was it gold? Your Uncle Everard?
No. At least I don't think so.
His wife, Christine.
Betty, do you believe that a ghost could dig a grave?
Well, I'm in danger from a ghost.
Oh, I told you, you'd think I was crazy.
John, what? Why are you looking at me like that?
I don't know. Better get that gun with you.
All right. I left it in the car. What good would a gun be against a ghost?
Station wagon still waiting at the gate, but I don't see Galt.
Maybe he went up to the house.
Galt, where are you?
Hello there, John.
What's up?
Uncle Everard.
What happened to Galt?
He came up to the house. He'd gone into the cemetery. I thought I'd better come down.
Oh.
Is it there?
Yes, it's there.
A freshly dug grave. Oh. Uncle Everard, this is my wife, Betty.
How are you, Betty?
Hello.
You saw the grave too, Betty?
Yes, and John says he thinks it's me. I'm afraid I don't understand.
You haven't told her anything yet, John?
Well, just a little. I couldn't bring myself to.
I think it's time you did. More tea, Betty?
Thank you, Uncle Edward. I will have a little more.
You, John?
No, thanks.
Too bad Christina's ill. She's upstairs in our room. But I hope she'll be better by tomorrow. You can see her then.
Maybe.
What do you mean?
That grave out there. Maybe it'll be filled tomorrow.
John, don't you think it's time you kept your promise to tell me what this is all about?
You tell her, Uncle Everard.
Well, Betty... there's a ghost in the Loomis family. That's it in a nutshell.
Oh, I see. And it was a ghost who dug that grave.
I know it sounds mad. But after 150 years, we Loomises have come to the conviction that it can't be anything other ghost.
150 years.
John's great-grandfather, Stuart Loomis, settled this strip of seacoast under a patent from the colonial governor. There's his picture over the fireplace.
He doesn't look like you, John.
Stuart Loomis was a hard man. There was a French privateer in these waters who made a lot of trouble in those days. Gaston Leroux, who sailed the seas with his wife, Antoinette.
But what has a French pirate and his wife to do with that grave?
Stuart Loomis captured Leroux and his wife, and under the authority conferred upon by the governor, had the power to hang them.
You mean women, too?
Yes. He hanged them both on a gibbet where our family cemetery now stands.
Oh, how terrible.
Before he died, Gaston Leroux laid a curse on the Loomis family. He swore that just as his wife was hanged, so would all the Loomis women die. He swore that he would come back and dig a grave for the wife of a Loomis in every generation and furnish the noose by which a Loomis would strangle his own wife.
But that's incredible.
Short while afterward, a fresh grave was found beside the gibbet where Leroux had been hung. That night, Stuart Loomis's wife, John's great-grandmother, was found hanging by the neck from the eaves of this very house.
An abrupt ending. Oopsie, but that's a creepy end to part one of our Inner Sanctum offering for the night.
Good old High Brown. Once again, bringing us another spooky tale.
Spooky indeed.
Absolutely.
This is a good one.
He even found a solution for the labor shortage. Have corpses to dig the graves. I like that.
Yeah. Keep those stiffs busy.
All right.
And they're literally stiffs.
Yeah. If Hollywood had their way, that's what they'd have the actors do.
Yep.
Yeah, but right. They'd be stuck on the graveyard shift.
Ooh, a rum-thump.
Well said, well
Where's
said.
Where's the
blinger
when you need it?
I don't know. Blinger guy is preparing
talk
for
about
potable
digging
water.
Dig your own grave.
Yep, Snowman James joins us. Thank you. Thank you for joining us live for Eevee House Radio. We're
Hello, Snowman.
Going to be wrapping up Inner Sanctum, and then it appears we're going to have plenty of time to have some additional fun as well.
Ooh, get that wheel greased up, Dale, during this next segment.
All righty.
Well, I'm going to grease something up. Hopefully, maybe the wheel. We'll see.
Just don't grease the door so it doesn't creak.
Oh, dear. Here comes another. There we are. Let's step away from the hashtag moment. Step away from the hashtag moment.
Sometimes some people just can't help themselves.
Yeah, the recording's pretty scratchy, but I think most of the scratchiness is done now, as it should settle down into the second part.
Yeah, we're lucky we have these, though, too, at the same time. Scratchy, though, some of them may be, at least we have them.
Yeah, off the surface noise. Off
Absolutely.
The records, the vinyl, well, it wasn't even vinyl. In some cases, actually recorded some of the armed forces stuff onto glass so they could easily be broken because they weren't supposed to be saved.
Ah. Can't even throw it in the fireplace like a Russian toast or whatever.
Like a Russian toast. There you go.
Let's throw you up.
Well, I'm surprised they didn't try. I'm surprised they didn't try and make them out of wood.
Man, that can keep the home fires burning, that's for sure.
It's economical.
Oh, no kidding.
So let's not do it. Because...
Wow, but they must have been so delicate. I mean, how it was to package it and then ship it or to where it needed to go, and made out of glass.
Yep, I'll have to dig that up. Elliot Lewis was talking about that, because when he was drafted, he ended up in Special Forces, because it was experience in acting and producing and such. And that's one thing that they had to do. So it's amazing that any of those still exist, if they do. But
it's truly amazing. Well, again, it's a good thing we got these to share, so that
I wouldn't. Absolutely.
Make sure the art is not lost. The art of old-time radio.
American tax dollars well spent to make and broadcast.
For a change, places. Yeah. For a change, yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
Well, let's wrap up.
Oh, I bet there is some GI.
Could be.
All right, go ahead.
Let's wrap up.
Not good old Bob just popped in, as well as Snowman James.
Yeah.
And, of course, Fogsbane.
Yeah, thanks for joining us as we wrap up part two of Inner Sanctum, Make Ready My Grave.
John's great grandmother. Found hanging by the neck from the eaves.
And the goat.
This very house.
And Stuart Loomis?
I told you Stuart Loomis was a hard man and had made many enemies. There were many who hated him deeply and bitterly. He was arrested and tried for the murder of his wife. Convicted and executed. Now you know the secret of the Loomis family.
But, John, that still doesn't prove there's a goat.
No, that one incident doesn't prove it. But it happened again when the next Loomis married. John's grandfather. And to the next Loomis, John's father. Sometimes a year after he married, sometimes 5 years. But the curse never fails.
It's happened in every generation?
Yes. And now, John Loomis has brought a new wife home. There's a freshly dug grave waiting in the family cemetery.
And I'm next.
I don't know, Betty. Maybe that grave isn't for you.
What?
Maybe it's for Christine. For my wife.
This is all ridiculous. A ghost couldn't dig a grave, make John strangle me to death. Uncle Everard, you can't believe such a legend. It can't be true.
Maybe not, my dear. But the graves of the strangled Loomis women are out there to prove it. Well, this is your room, Betty. I'd of course call you at 8 tomorrow morning.
Good night, Uncle Everard.
Good night, John.
Good night, Uncle Everard. This is such a big room. It's so gloomy.
The whole house is like that. It lies gloomy and sullen under the Loomis curse. Oh, Betty, I love you so much. We'll beat the curse together.
Let me go, darling. I want to change my clothes and wash.
All right. Where's that bathroom over there?
I'll only be a minute.
All right, darling.
Oh, it's a lovely bath.
Betty, what is...
John, quick!
What?
Look. Hanging from the shower bar.
What? A penguin's noose.
It's a real one this time. A rope.
Ready to hang someone.
Oh, put it there.
It's the Loomis curse. We can't get away from it.
No ghost could have hung that rope there.
Let's call Uncle Everard.
All right.
Have you got the gun with you?
No, it's in my handbag.
Get it.
But
get it, I say.
All right, John. Here, I've got it.
All right, now keep it with you all the time. And don't be afraid to use it on me if necessary.
All right, let's get your uncle.
This is his room. I wonder if I ought to wake him. It might upset Aunt Christine. She's sick.
We've got to wake him. Better knock harder.
But it wasn't locked.
Call him.
Uncle Everard. Uncle Everard? There's no answer. But there's a light in the room.
Push the door further open.
All right. Well, there's nobody in the room. The bed's empty. Uncle Everard? Hey, Christine.
Maybe in the bathroom. The door is open.
Hey,
hey, Christine. She's hanging by the leg.
She's dead.
The same kind of a noose is in her bathroom.
Uncle Everard hanged her. It's the Loomis curse catching up with us. No gold, any trace of Uncle Everard?
I searched the whole house, basement to attic. Not a sign of him.
He must have gone out. Come along.
But it's raining.
We've got to find him, Betty. Come on.
The dark out here, how will we ever find you?
I have a flashlight, ma'am. You look.
What?
Fresh footprints in the slush.
Oh, they must be Uncle Everard's. They lead down toward the cemetery. Come along, Gold.
Mr. John, you can see for yourself the footprints lead right to this new grave.
But why did he come here?
There's the answer, Daddy. A cross at the head of the empty grave. Throw the flashlight on it, Dalton. There's something written on it.
It says, Christine Lou.
Daddy, what is...
Look. Over there.
Another grave.
He's dug another one.
There's a cross on this one, too.
Does it say anything?
Yes. Yes, it does. It says, Betty Loomis.
John, sit close to me. That portrait of Stuart Loomis over the fireplace looks so real.
Now, remember, Betty, whatever happens, hold on to that gun and don't be afraid to use it tonight.
Where's Gold?
He ought to be here soon. He went to look for some weapons.
Here I am, Mr. John.
Gold, you always frighten me coming in so quietly.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Here, Mr. John. These ought to be pretty good weapons.
Size?
Yes, I had them sharpened only the other day. They could slice a man's head off in one stroke. Take one, Mr. John.
Thanks. But I'd hate to use it on Uncle Everard.
If he shows up tonight, you'd better use it.
Maybe he's come back into the house through the back way.
I'll go through the house again if you'd like. This time I'll start with the attic.
Be careful, Gulp.
I will.
John, I don't like him.
Gulp?
And I don't think he likes me either.
Yeah, that's true.
What's that?
Must be Gulp in the attic.
Help, Mrs.
Gulp! Must have met Uncle Everard hiding up there. Stay right here, Betty, and hold on to that gun.
John, be careful.
Don't worry, just take care.
John, come back. I'm frightened. I'm afraid to be alone. There's nothing to be afraid of. I have this gun. And if anybody comes, Lights went out. Who's there? Who's in this room? Don't come any closer. I have a gun and I'll shoot. I can't see you, but I'll shoot at the sound. John! Shoot.
It's not loaded. I took the bullets out when you left it in the car.
Gold?
Yes, ma'am, it's Gold. Mr. John is busy up there in the attic with the body of Mr. Everard. I killed him, too. And when Mr. John comes downstairs, he'll find you. And I'll cut him down in the dark with my scythe.
Why?
There were others besides the pirate LaRue who hated Stuart Loomis. Like my own great-grandfather, he was in the service of Stuart Loomis, and he hated him. When LaRue laid the curse on the Loomises, my great-grandfather decided to make it come true. It was he who strangled the wife of Stuart Loomis. And through the years, the gods from father to son have handed down their hate.
You're mad.
Maybe. I'll tighten the noose and
finish you. Where are you? Why is it dark in here?
Betty! Look out, it's gone. He has a eye.
And so will I.
John! John!
Barbara. What?
Here, John, dear. I promise you.
Betty, we finished forever with the Loomis crush.
A pretty rough honeymoon for Betty. But you know, there's a lesson in her story for forgetful wives. Yet if you keep tying little colored strings to your fingers to remind you of things and you still can't remember them, why not try a rope neatly tied around your neck? It's sure to help you forget.
Thank you, Mr. Hope, for a very enjoyable performance at our mystery theater. Hope has had a Galloway reminding you to sleep tight. Good night.
And it sounds like Charlie Brown's
teacher. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Wah, wah, wah. That oboe like it's a Bernard Herrmann score. But it's not.
Do you know that for sure?
I would guess not.
I would guess not, too.
Yeah, I don't think he did a lot of... he did do a lot of radio.
I don't know that he did any Inner Sanctum. He did a lot of work mostly for CBS radio. I think he was their music director for quite some time.
Yeah.
That's why many of the early suspenses were all scored by him.
Did he also not do Mercury Theater, I think?
Yeah, which was also CBS, right. Yes.
Was it? Oh, okay. I did not know that. Right.
Yep.
Every
Columbia.
Day.
Columbia. The gem of the screens, something like that.
Every day is another journey to become a little less stupid.
One silly fact at a time.
Why not?
Why not? Why not indeed?
Well, we got a lot of time left.
We could try this coffin moral of the story, sort of.
Oh, dear me. Let us not forget yon moral of yon story. Eerie House Radio proudly presents another Garless Moral of the Story.
Apologies to Gar. Unlike women's dress sizes, usually a coffin is one size fits all. That's all I got. I'm in trouble.
I'm thinking if I'm in my coffin, I don't care what size they put on me. Just, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense too.
Make sure there's a lot of party favors. That's all I ask.
Make sure that the Wi-Fi is working there too.
The Wi-Fi?
Yeah, I want at least 4G, if not 5G, in my casket, you know. Because if I wake
Absolutely.
Up, I want to tune into the archive of Eerie House Radio.
That would be fun to listen. in the afterlife.
Oh, yes.
Or in any life. Something wrong with a lot of us. The entire lot of us.
You're just figuring that out?
Yes.
You're just figuring that out? Wow.
Yeah. No, I'm just.
Oh.
Please.
Please.
Please. Very please.
Okay.
And, you know, whenever
right.
you're really stalling for time,
there's always Stan
Freeberg.
Newspapers are just as good an advertising medium as radio.
Sure, driving home at night, you can enjoy your newspaper as it lies there on the seat. And there's another good thing about newspapers. You can read them while you're rushing to get ready for work in the morning, right?
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight. And in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o. Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million.
That's all.
That's all?
That's all there is. Yeah, that's all.
150 million. Wow.
That's it. Yeah, no more, no less.
Oh.
150 million. Wow.
150 million angry Erie House listeners. No. Yep. I think it's time to shove a coin
and
in the machine.
And that was, if I'm not mistaken, that was the legendary Shirley Bassey.
It was,
that,
yes, it was.
That, I love Shirley. She had a powerful voice, indeed. I'm shoving a coin in the jukebox. We got to get some music going here. Yep, here we go.
All righty.
Okay. I got a wooden nickel right here. Title of this one, 4:20 a.m.
What feels good?
4:20 a.m. Wake and bake.
sleeping. I was much earlier than that.
Taking a nap. Known for a little peppier tune, that's David Rose. Yeah, the same guy who gave us The Stripper.
Yep. And he did a lot of radio as well. He took over for when Ozzie Nelson Orchestra left Red Skelton. He took over for Red Skelton and stayed with him for quite some time, working under two different sponsorships.
Okay.
Did David Rose also do Bonanza, or am I thinking of another? He had something to do with the orchestration of it.
I'm thinking of it. He was always very heavy on the strings, even back in radio. Very heavy on the strings. I think he could have. That's a very interesting question.
I have to say, as much as I am a big fan of music and film and television, I am at a loss.
I'll have to look that one up later on tonight.
There you go.
The Bonanza Suite. That was written and performed by David Rose. You're right. It was. Yep.
So
good job, CW.
Yep.
Good job, CW. Yes.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
A little less stupid.
So he went from the stripper to the Ponderosa.
No, I think it was the other way around. I think he went from the Ponderosa to the stripper.
The Ponderosa?
He spent too much time on the range. So he went from the Ponderosa to the stripper, yeah.
I guess yes. So. He gets lonely on the range.
Yes. I've looked at one too many cow.
I think we better move along.
All right. Who wants to spin that wheel?
Oh, CW is so good at it.
Shall I do it?
Yeah.
Here I am, coming up to the podium, up the stairs, around the corner, over the bridge, through the woods, and...
to grandmother's
spin
house.
Spin the wheel.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest tonight is one of Hollywood's most popular character actors, Mr. Hans Conried. One of Mr. Conried's best characters is that of a blustering Englishman. And it just so happens that my partner Jerry is terribly impressed by very important Britishers. So, with your permission, I'd like to fool Jerry into thinking that Mr. Conried is a famous English actor. Now, we'll see what happens. And, here's Jerry now. So, here goes. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, I'd like to present one of England's foremost actors, a man you've seen in countless British films. Here he is, Mr. John Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. As I told you earlier, I've been exceedingly eager to appear on your program. I was told that if I were to meet Martin and Lewis, I would see living proof of the Darwinian theory that man has descended from the apes.
Well, maybe my partner can help you. Hey, Jeff, come here.
Yeah, what is it, Dean? I was just...
Land o' Goshen, there's a stranger in our midst.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Well, good night.
Oh, no, don't rush off, John. Well, why don't you ask Jerry what he thinks of the Darwin theory?
Well, I'd be happy to, just as soon as he stops swinging his tail in my face.
All right, let's stop with the insults, buddy.
I don't even know you.
Oh, come on, Jerry, you know who this is. I told you someone special was visiting us tonight, remember?
It's your cousin Salvatore from Italy.
Oh, With my accent, I could hardly be Cousin Salvatore from Italy.
Good heavens, I've been tricked. The man's a Swede.
Tell me, Gene, would you call this fellow an American adult?
Yes, I guess so.
You know, I never shall understand how you chaps did it to us at Bunker Hill.
Bunker Hill? Oh, I get it. The bloke's a Britisher. Hey, tell me, is it true that Big Ben wears elevator shoes?
Cut it out, Jerry. It's about time you were introduced properly. I'm sure you've heard of Mr. Newton.
Newton? Newton? Newton?
Oh, sure, I've been eating his figs.
Jerry, Mr. Newton happens to be one of our greatest actors. Haven't you seen him in a lot of English pictures?
How could I? We don't have a television set. You know? You know, Mr. Newton, we make pictures, too. Right now, one of our pictures is playing in England.
That is precisely why I am in America.
Don't be so uppity. I know lots of English actors. Do you know that husband and wife team, Lawrence Olivier and Vivian Locke?
Why, it's unbelievable. I'll wager he refers to our Prime Minister as the Honorable Winston Cheesecake.
I'm only kidding, honest, Mr. Newton. I really got a lot of respect for you. Really, I have. As a matter of fact, I'd love to be in an English picture with you.
Like Oliver Twist?
Well, why not give it a try tonight? Charles Dickens is past caring, and I've always wanted to play the part of Fagin.
All righty.
And now, let's go back to England in the 1800s. Our scene is a miserable street, in a miserable district, in a miserable suburb of London. There, sitting on a curb, is a miserable little boy.
My name is Oliver Twistity. Me mother disappeared the day I was born. She took one look at me and that did it. Since then, I've been working on me own. The first year, I worked 16 hours a day, just changing myself. When I was 10, I'd walked 60 miles to London. I would have taken the streetcar, only it was in Hollywood making a movie. Streetcar, you know. Now I'm in London, cold and alone. Oi, who's this shifty bloke stepping over to me?
Hello, my lad. What's your name?
They call me Oliver Twister.
Twister? That's a funny name.
Dad wanted a pretzel. I beg your pardon, sir. I beg your pardon, sir. How come they call you the Artful Dodger?
How do you know I was the Artful Dodger?
I read the book.
You look hungry, Oliver. Why don't you eat?
I can't afford it, sir.
I know an old man who'll give you board and lodgings for nothing. Name is Fagin, it is.
Where does he live, sir?
Just follow me right up these steps. I'll give this special knock. He's not in.
Let me try, sir.
Who's knocking?
It's me. It's me, the Artful Dodger.
Who've you got with you?
The door's closed. How'd you know someone was with me?
I read the book, too.
Oh. Well, Oliver, this is Fagin.
Yes, boy. That's me, Fagin. They call me Fagin. Kind Fagin. Generous Fagin. That's me, boy. Fagin.
Fagin? Hey, Fagin, me boy. This is Oliver Twist, eh?
Twist? Twist, that's a funny name.
All right, Dad wanted a corkscrew.
Enough of this petty idiocy. I can't stand it. Fie on. Fie. Foul. Foul.
You left one out.
Which one is that?
Seth.
Tell me, Oliver, what do you think of our little home here?
Hey, you got pigs in here. Oh, you ain't sleeping with no dirty pigs, eh?
Oh, don't let it trouble you, boy. They'll get used to you. Oliver's hungry, Fagin, and he ain't got no money.
Ah, well, cheer up, Oliver. From now on, the yeats are on old Fagin.
Here, I may be poor, sir, but when I eat off a table.
All right, Oliver. You like cheesecake?
Sure. Oh, sure, sir. He's the best prime minister we ever had.
That's the great Hans Conried guesting on the Lewis and Martin show.
Yep. Boy, there isn't a role that guy couldn't do. Comedy or dramatic. He's just unbelievable.
I always liked him. He showed up all over the place when I was a kid. Hans Conried.
Yep.
Cartoons,
even on the Night
movies.
Stalker. Yep. Night Stalker. Yeah.
Which episode was he in, The Night Stalker?
The Black Knight. He was the guy that the caretaker
the
of the museum.
And
he was the caretaker of the museum there that they were turning into a soda pop discotheque.
Okay. And why wouldn't they? I'm abhorred.
I believe he also did a Lost in Space.
Yeah,
I'm sure he did. Why not? Why not?
He was Wrong Way Feldman on
Gilligan's
Island.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good old Wrong Way.
I'm shocked they never had him on Star Trek. What happened?
Good question. Probably busy making commercials or something. Yeah.
Yes. The question of the ages.
Actually, one of the later things he did in life, he did a couple of not only mystery theaters, but also the Sears/Mutual Radio Theater, and have an interesting story we may do Christmas time. Gar's talked about it before. It's called The Last of Scrooge, which he plays Ebenezer Scrooge after he had changed over to be the nice guy.
That would be interesting.
So as the holiday comes upon us, so shall Hans Conried, perhaps.
It would be a fine Christmas gift.
Oh, yes.
From Gay to all of us.
So say we all.
Well, let's get a look ahead again at Halloween again Friday night. All right, they're all 6:30 shows, Friday through Monday. So Friday we're doing monstrous music of from various ages and some incredible sound bites and movie trailers. Saturday night, let's do that Halloween double feature drive-in with Ghost Breakers with Bob Hope from Screen Directors Playhouse, and then The Curse of Frankenstein by The Goon Show. That ought to be interesting. Comedy movies for Halloween. That's right. And then Sunday, the 29th, it's Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff.
Lots of
audio treats right there. That's a two-hour show. One full episode, each of them, but no, not just that. Much, much, much more as we pay tribute to two of horror's classic actors. And then, of course, it's our War of the Worlds on Monday the 30th with NPR's 50th anniversary reenactment from 35 years ago.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's the 35th anniversary of the 50th anniversary of War of the Worlds.
And, of course, if they keep scheduled to the way it was, Monday, Weirdest Really Bad Movie should be back on the Vortex, and we're bringing to you the Boris Karloff thriller episode of The Return of Andrew Bentley, both starring and directed by the One Step Beyond guy, John Newland. and hosted by Mike Mason, myself, in a green screen haunted house. So,
yep. And I don't know if I'm seeing any posts for the Twitches for Horrible Horror Sternger the Ghoul in about, 3.5 minutes. But if not, I am sure he will have a rerun show if he's not doing something live for you tonight.
Oh, but just says he went live, so he's there with his warm-up right now. So, yep, he'll be on tonight.
There you go. That'll be right after we're done here in just a short time.
Oh, fantastic.
What's that?
Missed it. Yep.
Yep. Doug on it. All right. Well, we got just enough time for this.
Did somebody say farm over there?
It's just a cheerful little peppy thing there.
It is.
It was.
I thought I heard the word
polka. Yeah. No, I think the polka and like Eastern Europeans are there's a good amount of those in Cleveland, Ohio.
There are, and all the way down here to Barberton, all of Northeast Ohio had quite a bit of that. Those peoples that settled there enjoyed that good old polka music.
And white socks, pink flamingos on your front lawn. Or a chrome ball. Gotta have a chrome ball.
I guess.
Yep, and again, I can't stress the importance of pink flamingos.
There was a story of pink flamingos that were seen for the first time in history in Wisconsin. Apparently, a hurricane kind of blew them a little off course.
Oh, no.
So they end up in Wisconsin, of all places.
Probably ate them or something.
They're gonna freeze their pink cushions off there.
There's some of them people from Wisconsin, man. They'll eat anything.
Get a load of that. Hey,
see, I knew
mom,
you would get
that,
CW. I knew you would get that.
Yeah.
Dave,
yeah.
That's,
so I guess the people in Milwaukee, instead of seeing pink elephants, they were seeing pink flamingos.
There you go.
Ah. Not sure what they were seeing was true or not.
And Ed Gein. So there you go. So join us as we kick off Halloween week Friday night at 6:30 Eastern. But until then, if the timer is right here at Blog Talk.
Mine isn't.
The castle lights are growing dim.
Let's see what happens.
There's
here.
No one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstein.
Happy. And me, Vincent.
Don't
watch it,
come
Vincent.
Alone.
I think we did it.
Can you dig it?
What's so funny? What's so funny?
Pretty close. Just missed the door slam there pretty much for the most part.
Okay.
Yep.
Get
5 years ago, I posted a news. Yeah.
There you go. You got a yodel.
You sure know how to pick a guy up.
Oh, there we are.
Usually with very large tongs. Thank you.
Yes. And gloves. You got to wear gloves.
Gloves, yes. Must have gloves.
But the only thing that would cheer me up more is...
Make me a size of Jack's food!
Yeah, that does...
Yeah,
that.
Good luck.
That
good luck with that. Good luck with that.
Olin Howland. Known for that and being the first one to get killed by the blob.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my gosh. Now I know. Okay. Steve McQueen's and Anita Corso's version of the Blob.
Yes.
The first Blob.
Yes.
The original. The original,
yeah,
Blob.
That was Olin Howland, the same guy that was the make me a sergeant in charge of the booze guy from them.
Ensconced in two classic sci-fi flicks.
There you go. He's up there with Maria Uspenskaya as one of my favorite people.
Oh, nicely pronounced. Maria Uspenskaya. Well done.
Yeah. I'm hot for her.
Yeah, I noticed her in when I was redoing my shows that we had her in the Beyond Tomorrow.
Oh.
Or as it was originally called, Beyond Christmas. She was in that.
Really?
Yeah, she played, a blind but sensitive to spirit world housekeeper type thing.
I don't know how much housekeeping you can do if you haven't.
I think I'd go around saying, hey, you missed a spot. You missed a spot. You missed a spot.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
Shame on me.
Not
shame
as cruel as Helen Keller's parents punishing her by rearranging the furniture.
That's true.
That's cruel. That's cruel.
Now, another actress I was thinking of.
Terrible.
I know she must have done some maybe sci-fi or other horror things. She's probably best known as T'Pol in original Star Trek, The Amok Time, Senior Lofty.
That's the one where Spock had to go spawning upstream or whatever.
Yes.
Like a sturgeon or like a salmon.
Yeah, pretty much.
Spock is a salmon.
Well, I admire that role because at least it shows that even though he's only half human, the other half has to kowtow to the Vulcan part. So,
wait, you're saying he has to kowtow to T'Pol? T'Pol? He has to kowtow to T'Pol. T'Pol, my mouth.
I'm not going to encourage you. I'm just going to stop.
it's too late.
Yeah, I suppose so. Game over, man. Game over. That's it.
No. You must take your punishment.
But her and Maria Uspenskaya, I always sort of got confused because they have that same European accent. They have that same sort of bearing and countenance.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Oh, I just thought of something. Since we now have climate change, they dropped the Blob in the Arctic. Should we be worried?
No, it'll probably just warm up the thing.
Oh, wow. Now, who would win that one? The Thing versus the Blob.
That would be a good movie. They dropped it up there. They might as well have them encounter the thing.
Absolutely. I mean, we had Alien versus Predator.
Yep.
Time to do Thing versus the Blob. Cool.
It would be interesting, that's for sure. Yes, it would be.
Yep.
Of course, it would have to be then Alien versus Predator versus Thing versus the Blob, because Alien versus Predator was also done in the Arctic as well.
I guess it would, wouldn't it?
Hmm.
Tag team match.
Yep.
And in this corner, we have the Blob alongside the Predator. And in this corner, we have Alien versus the Thing. This time it's personal. This is how it goes up.
Almost as good as Dale's Arnold yesterday.
Yes, there was a Mama Umamau.
There was a Mama Umamau.
Yeah, that's, this is Mama Umamau.
Okay.
Mama Umamau.
It has lyrics. Unlike Surfing Bird. Well, no, Surfing Bird does, has it, doesn't it? The Bird is...
Yeah,
no,
I
yeah, The so. Bird is a Word is a different song.
Yeah.
So these songs are probably the whole reason I like surf music.
Well, and a good reason for that to be.
Wait a minute, it's going to break out with some crazy stuff. Oh, nope. After the next verse. This guy goes spastic with the Mama Uma mouse. Yeah, we gotta take a look at that Mixcloud idea, gang.
Yeah, that would give us
some fun.
Yeah, I looked at that a little bit. I have to look at it some more.
Oh, the Halloween show we could throw, Dave.
Oh, yeah. Well, an occasional novelty song show, too, period, just out of that, you know?
Well, oh, yeah. And yeah, just play novelty songs. Oh, my gosh. Hold on. Does this never end? All right. Well, there you go. Yeah, too much of that will give you stomach distress. But yeah, time to start uploading music for this Friday. I can't wait.
Absolutely. And note, I haven't been kicked off yet.
Yeah, you haven't been.
No, that's good.
Yeah, good connection.
Yeah.
Good connection tonight.
Yeah, you're sounding good. Good and strong.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I don't know why. Chick-fil-A let me down, and Domino's and Little Caesars and just haven't cut the mustard of late.
For fine dining?
Yes, fine dining has... Well, I haven't tried a steakhouse yet. Let's see. Haven't tried the Outback.
Ooh.
Or have I? Oh, and Haute Cuisine, the ultra uber restaurant, you know, where
you say oat or goat?
Uh-oh.
Did you say goat cuisine?
Goat cuisine?
Yeah. I wonder what it would sound like if you bit into a goat.
I think it could sound something like this.
Yeah.
So make sure your goat is shed its skin before you do that.
Yes.
Yeah. Make sure it's prepared well done. Julia Child recommends your goat be well done. Bon appetit.
Yes. Make sure you roast the goat slowly.
I feel the need to grab for some tofu after that.
No, I meant roast a la Dean Martin.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I meant,
mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yep.
Sure.
Yep, Gentlemen, I must be away because, as always, there's work to be done, that four-letter word, that and the fact I don't want to push my luck and lose
Gotcha. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge.
Yep. So with that, you have one more day to handle. Uh-oh, she's fading out.
Oh, yes. Uh-oh. Mr. Durante, quickly, hurry to the stage before I'm knocked off. Hello?
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say
good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Horrible up we the day, and
ink-a-dink-a-do. Yeah.
Good night. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Appearing one night only in Fort Laramie.
Happy holidays.
Arrivederci, hasta la vista.
Adios.
Adios, muchachos, caballeros,
you get out of here.